Welcome to the Earth First Update, bringing you all the environmental news you can use for over 20 years. I'm Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org on Thursday, May 17th, 2018. I'd like to ask you to have a pencil and paper handy so you can take down the names, addresses, emails, web pages, and phone numbers so you can take action for the environment. Let's get started with announcements. The California Native Plant Society Habitat Restoration Team is having a restoration on May 22nd from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. These will likely be our last projects to mop up the outlier sites at Quail Hollow Ranch. We will be back in late fall for another broom bash season at Quail Hollow Ranch. In the meantime, we'll be starting up our coastal beach projects in late May or June. See you out there. To get to Quail Hollow Ranch County Park, leave Santa Cruz and go up Graham Hill Road. As you come down the hill to Felton, turn right at the light and drive 2 miles up East Ziani Road and turn left on Quail Hollow Road. The park entrance is a half a mile up on the right. They'll meet you in the gravel parking lot on the left side of the entrance road. The Habitat Restoration Group is an all-volunteer group working to restore native habitat in the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. The program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80 as well as special group projects. Wear comfortable layered clothing. Bring something to drink and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine. But if things get particularly unpleasant, they'll call it a day. Tools are provided. Bring your gloves and your water. For more information, contact their program leader, Linda. Her number, 831-462-4041. That's 831-462-4041. Or you can email her at redwoodrn, that's R-E-D-W-D-R-N, at packbell.net. Or you can visit their webpage at www.cruzcnps.org. That's C-R-U-Z-C-N-P-S.org. And that restoration is happening Wednesday, May 22nd, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. And the Matole Forest Defense is having a training camp May 24th through the 27th. Greetings from the Matole Action Training Camp crew. They're having another Forest Defense training camp. They'll be gathering from the 24th to the 27th of May. And you'll have to contact them at their Facebook page to RSVP, and you'll get directions. Come hang out, learn tons of cool stuff, and get plugged in with your local forest defense campaigns. This event will be taking place in the Matole River Valley, land we recognize was stolen from the indigenous Matole people. Workshops and discussions will include strategic nonviolent direct action, know your rights and security culture. They'll have a plant walk, tree climbing training and knot tying, trauma-informed care, co-counseling, ground truthing, navigating in the mountains, and herbal first aid and tarpology. The camp is in support of ongoing old-growth forest defense on Rainbow Ridge. For at least 20 years, forest defenders have climbed trees, blocked logging roads, and locked themselves to logging equipment to stop the destruction of ancient trees. The campsite is ADA accessible, and if you have any other accessibility needs, please include them in your RSVP, and we will do our best. Help us to recreate an inclusive, safe space where people feel good about addressing oppressive behaviors to heal and unlearn them. Matole Action Training Camp Organizers, and I believe that's at Matole Forest Defense at Facebook. And Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project is having a celebration June 9th at Walton Lake Recreation Area in the Ochoco National Forest. If you'd like to camp with the group, you can email paula.e.hood@gmail.com to RSVP. That's paula.e.hood@gmail.com. Individuals may need to reserve private campsites once the group site space has been taken. We'll also have dispersed campsites outside of the designated recreation for people who want to camp out there. And once again, that's June 9th at Walton Lake in the Ochoco National Forest. For information, contact the Blue Mountain Biodiversity Project, That's bluemountainsbiodiversity@gmail.com. And David Nathan Gypsy Chain Memorial Scholarship has been announced by the Environmental Protection Information Center. This coming September will be 20 years since David Nathan Gypsy Chain lost his life while trying to prevent illegal logging in an Earth First action near Grizzly Creek in the Van Dusen River watershed. To mark this anniversary and remember the idealistic young man, we have established David Nathan Gypsy Chain Memorial Scholarship. Administered by the Humboldt Area Foundation, this fund will provide an annual scholarship of $1,000 for a high school student or first-year student at Humboldt State University or College of the Redwoods who has demonstrated commitment to issues of forest ecology through volunteer or academic projects. In addition to assisting students, establishing this scholarship will provide a focus for reflection on changes in our community over the past 20 years. What have we learned since the Painesville controversies over and in the forest in the 1990s? How have we grown as individuals and as a community? And for those of us who knew Gypsy or knew of him, how did his death influence the course of events in our lives? We envision memorial events on the HSU campus on Sunday, September 16th and Monday, September 17th, including performances, lectures, and arts displays. Members of Gypsy's family will travel there to attend. Gypsy's mother, Cindy Ellsbrooks, will serve on an annual scholarship selection committee. We hope the task will bring her comfort. If you would like to serve on our creative team and help produce the memorial events in September, please contact either of us directly. We appreciate the assistance with all aspects, including designing and facilitating the events, gathering materials for a memorial website, publicizing the memorial funds, and the events. Go to the wildcalifornia.org. That's wildcalifornia.org for further information. And unfortunately, wilderness giant Stuart Brandy Brandborg has died at the age of 93 in this story written by Kevin Proschult. On April 14th, wilderness legend Stuart M. Brandy Brandborg broke camp one last time from his home in Hamilton, Montana, and headed over the divide. He was 93 years old. Brandy was a giant in the wilderness movement and the last surviving architect of the 1964 Wilderness Act. A wildlife biologist by training, Brandy conducted groundbreaking field studies of mountain goats in Idaho and Montana in the late 1940s and early 1950s. That work led to a job in the National Wildlife Federation in Washington, D.C. area in 1954. He quickly came to the attention of Howard Zanisser, executive director of the Wilderness Society. Zanisser recruited Brandy to join the Wilderness Society's Governing Council in 1956, the same year that Zanisser drafted the first version of the Wilderness Act, so Brandy was in on the ground floor of the 8-year push to pass this landmark bill. In 1960, Zanisser hired Brandy to join the staff of the Wilderness Society, where he worked alongside David Brower, the Sierra Club, and others to pass the bill through Congress. Once again, wilderness giant Stuart Brandy Brandborg has died at the age of 93. And an indigenous Mapuche leader in Chile has been acquitted on charges of terrorism in this story by Courtney Parker of Intercontinental Cry. While millions of North Americans were raising tequila shots to their gross misunderstanding of what Cinco de Mayo means to Mexico or Mexican Americans, the criminal court of Temuco, Chile, was busy issuing an acquittal on all charges to Mapuche political and spiritual leader Machi Francisca Lincona, according to a recent report from Ireland-based human rights group Frontline Defenders. In January of 2013, Lincona was arrested and charged with terrorism and murder along with 8 other Mapuche land defenders in connection with the death of 2 individuals whose home was set ablaze. In a more sobering development, 3 other Mapuche peoples, Jose Huinca, Jose Coche, and Luis Quidel, were concurrently issued convictions of violating Chile's anti-terrorist act. Intercontinental Cry reported in October of 2017 on how Chile's anti-terrorism laws applied in this aforementioned case was in fact a remnant of and legally enacted by the infamous Pinochet military dictatorship in 1984 to facilitate the crushing of political dissidents. Lincanao is a human rights and indigenous spiritual leader from the Mapuche people of Chile, which involves, among other things, fighting for land rights on her and other people's ancestral territories as colonial powers fight back to frame such activity as terrorism. Intercontinental Cry reported on this in February of 2018 as part of a larger global trend, also evident in countries such as Nicaragua and the United States. According to the Frontline Defenders report, in 2008, Lynn Canao had submitted a call for a protective action to the Supreme Court of Chile to stop the illegal logging which has been ravaging and ransacking forested lands in sacred areas of Chilean territories. Such activity manifests as an explicit momentum towards ecocide in a uniquely biodiverse region where Mapuche medicinal people regularly harvest medicinal plants. Through this direct activism in protecting Mapuche land and related access to what the World Health Organization refers to as traditional indigenous medicine, Lynn Canao was notably the first pioneering indigenous rights activist to successfully cite the International Labor Organization's ILO 169 Convention regarding indigenous and tribal international law. Early in January of 2013, Lynn Canao was not only forcibly and violently detained from her home, but unthinkably she was forced to change out of her traditional indigenous clothing, which represented her status in the community, not only as a political, but as a spiritual leader. Continued attempts at criminalizing her activism have been contextualized by even broader physical, hostile cultural and legal environment Chilean authorities and land poachers have exhibited through their actions and rhetoric regarding Mapuche attempts to protect their land, culture, and people. Frontline Defenders welcomes the acquittal of Machi Francisca Lynn Canao as it believes she was targeted for her peaceful and legitimate human rights work. Nevertheless, Frontline Defenders expresses concern for the ongoing criminalization of the Mapuche people, which it believes is on account of prevailing stereotypes and deep-rooted discrimination against this indigenous group in Chile. And Idaho has approved a grizzly bear hunt in this story written by Laura Zuckerman of Reuters. Idaho last Thursday approved the first grizzly bear hunt in the state in 43 years, a decision denounced by conservationists waging a court battle to restore protections for grizzlies in and around Yellowstone National Park. U.S. wildlife managers in June said the roughly 700 bears that roam parts of Yellowstone and the adjacent states of Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming no longer faced the threat of extinction. They removed the bears from the federal list of endangered and threatened wildlife, opening the way for trophy hunting outside of Yellowstone National Park. Both Idaho and Wyoming planned hunting seasons this fall, while Montana said it was holding off to ensure the bears' long-term recovery. Idaho is offering just one male grizzly sports tag that hunters can submit their names in a random drawing for a hunt that runs from September 1st through November 15th in the eastern part of Idaho. The plan is strongly endorsed by sportsmen who say hunting grizzlies is long overdue, but it has infuriated conservationists who argue it is too soon to kill grizzlies in the lower 48 states, where they occupy just a fraction of their historic range. We are disappointed that today Idaho granted trophy hunters their wish to kill a grizzly bear to mount a head on a wall or use a rug on their floor, said Andrea Santasier, attorney for the Center for Biological Diversity. The center is among groups suing to restore protections for Yellowstone area bears that were stripped of their protection last year in a case whose outcome could affect planned fall hunts. Idaho Fish and Game spokesperson Roger Phillips said in a statement last Thursday that Yellowstone area bears have been recovered for years, and hunting is a part of a conservation strategy that can be used to manage their numbers. Wyoming wildlife commissioners will make a final decision later this month on a hunting proposal that could see as many as 23 grizzly bears shot and killed. Grizzlies in the lower 48 states were shot, poisoned, and trapped to near extinction before coming under U.S. Endangered Species Act protections in 1975 when their numbers had shrunk to as few as 700, which compares to about 1,800 today and a historic high of near 100,000, according to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services. That agency on Wednesday signaled it may consider floating a delisting proposal in September tied to grizzlies in and around Glacier National Park in northwestern Montana. And here's the Buffalo Field Campaign update from the field. Hazing in the Hebgen Basin quarantine sadly approved. Three hazing operations took place within 2 days this week on the cattle-free private lands of the Gallatin National Forest. While buffalo have gained year-round habitat, it is all to the north of the Madison River. Lands to the south of the river were excluded, even though it is well known that buffalo utilize and needed this habitat. A small bachelor group of bull buffalo and a small family group with a brand new calf had made it out of the Denny Creek area near the South Fork of Madison. It was the bull buffalo who were targeted beginning Monday afternoon. The family group got away long before the agents could catch them. It was one of the strangest hazes we have seen. Five riders from the Montana Department of Livestock, Montana Department of Fish, Wildlife and Parks, and USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service went after the bulls, but not in their typical aggressive fashion. They simply walked. They even allowed the bulls to graze some and get brief drinks of water. As terrible and unnecessary as hazing is, this was an extremely rare occasion where we witnessed some semblance of benevolence. Maybe it was because the former DOL agent Bridger Cunningham quit. Maybe it was just one of those days. Either way, the haze was slow and riders dropped off along the way, with just two ending it without even pushing the bulls across the Madison River. Once it was over, the bulls just went about to grazing, and some got to spend some amazing time with their gentle presence. And we suspect the agents had other things planned. The following day, the agents returned. This time, there were six riders. They went back down the Madison Arm Road where they had left the bulls day before and proceeded to look for them as well as the family group who they had lost. They found the family group, but not the bulls. This time, they weren't so gentle, even though there was a brand new baby buffalo in this group. They ran them hard through the thick deadfall of the forest, down the dusty road, and out towards the Madison River. The buffalo were hot and panting, and the little calf was exhausted. The buffalo were hazed out to the mud flats at the edge of the water where the Madison River starts to become Hebgen Lake. They were then pushed away from the shore and through more fallen trees that were hard for two-leggeds to navigate and much, much harder for a tiny, brand-new four-legged calf. The agents intended to push them back to and across the water over to the northwest bluffs where they are free to roam. After it was over, they had succeeded. The buffalo crossed and exhausted, climbed the steep bluffs where they were finally left in peace. We stayed in the area until all the agents had loaded up their horses. Our rope patrol, upon returning to their car, which was parked relatively close to the livestock trailer, found the bulls. The agents did not, as they were headed down the Madison Arm Road, seemingly done for the day. They kept stopping, and we could tell they were looking for those bulls. The youngest one in the group had struck out on his own for a stroll and was unfortunately spotted. All six riders unloaded their horses and some went after that bull while the rest went in the direction he had come from to look for his more mature friends. Unfortunately, they were found. But today, the bulls were not so cooperative. These bulls were full of it, really frisky, jumping around, sparring, and rolling in the dirt. These big boys definitely made the cowboys work and the rest of us couldn't help but laugh. Because bull buffalo don't have families to take care of, little ones to shelter, they don't feel the need to flee as mothers protecting young do. They can play around with the agents, give them a hard time, and it's these little things that raise our spirits when they are being bullied by cowboys. After some time, the buffalo were hazed in the same direction as the family group had been earlier, but unlike the family group, they didn't climb the bluffs as the agents would have liked them to. Who knows where they might be now, maybe right back where they started, before they were so rudely interrupted. In other news of wild buffalo abuse, Yellowstone National Park announced yesterday that their dreaded 50-year-old quarantine plan has been approved. This means that Yellowstone will conduct capture operations, which will include slaughter to find buffalo subjects who they can domesticate under the guise of conservation. Quarantine is a livestock management paradigm not fit for any wildlife, and for wild buffalo it means the end of their wild ways. Quarantine can also result in buffalo being sent to zoos, commercialized, ranched for meat, and otherwise made into commodities. The Fort Peck Indian Reservation will likely receive some of these quarantined buffalo, but yet it is pretty hard to trust anything from the government. Last year, Fort Peck was told if they built a quarantine facility, then they could bring buffalo there and quarantine them on the reservation. They spent $500,000 on the facility and then were told by Montana and the federal government, the same agencies who told them to build it, that because they were outside of the brucellosis designated surveillance area that they could not bring buffalo there. Later, after 52 bulls who were being held captive in Yellowstone for quarantine purposes were released, Yellowstone and Interior stated that these buffalo were set to go to Fort Peck any day. We then called Fort Peck's tribal chairman, and he had been told nothing of this. It's sickening how the government uses native peoples to push their agenda through. While we fully support the return of wild buffalo to tribal lands, out of respect for the buffalo, the people, and the land herself, migration is the way to accomplish that. We will continue to fight against this tool of the oppressor every step of the way. Ending on a positive note, more and more wild buffalo babies are being born every day. Patrols come home with huge grins after spending so many hours in their presence. Horse Butte is teeming with buffalo calves, and they are all safe there. Their moms can give birth to them in peace there, and they can grow strong and healthy and not have to worry about bully cowboys coming to chase them off the ground they choose to be on. It's still amazing to us that this tranquility exists after so many years of Horse Butte being a veritable war zone with helicopters, state, federal, and county law enforcement, and yelling cowboys descending on hundreds of buffalo to chase them down dusty roads for relentless miles. There is now peace there. Wild is the way, and roam free. And for more information, you can go to the webpage www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. That's buffalofieldcampaign.org. And Epic stops a tower in Redwood National Park in this story written by Amber Shelton of the Environmental Protection Information Center. The Office of Emergency Services has heard our voices loud and clear and has decided not to put an emergency communications tower in Redwood National Park. The initial proposal called for three towers ranging from 120 to 270 feet in height, one of which was proposed inside the boundaries of Redwood National Park. But thanks to 1,451 EPIC members from 32 states and 28 countries who spoke up by sending comments through EPIC's two action alerts, none of the towers will be built within Redwood National Park. Instead, the towers will be built at alternative locations outside of the park. If you want more information, go to www.wildcalifornia.org. And the California Fish and Game Commission has adopted emergency regulations that increase purple sea urchin bag limits to 20 gallons with no limits on possession. The emergency regulation will remain in effect for 180 days until November 6th, unless extended by the commission. Upon expiration, the bag limit will return to 35 sea urchins. A recent explosion of purple sea urchin populations off Northern California has prompted requests for the increased daily bag limits as an option to reduce purple sea urchin numbers. The increase in purple urchin populations is one of several extreme environmental conditions contributing to a widespread collapse of Northern California kelp forests. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife is collaborating with commercial divers, academic researchers, and stakeholders to clear purple sea urchins in selected test plots in order to study the effectiveness of clearing on restoring bull kelp ecosystems. CDFW and its partners are working on permits and procedures to conduct controlled experiments to evaluate smashing compared to collecting purple sea urchins in these test plots. California Department of Fish and Wildlife reminds recreational participants that the new recreational limit of 20 gallons allows sea urchin collection while skin or scuba diving by hand, but there are still in effect regulations against the wastage of fish. Recreational harvesters of the urchin must put harvested sea urchins to use. Smashing and disposing of sea urchins in the trash is illegal. But collecting purple sea urchins to extract their gonads for eating. Afterwards, the urchins make a good addition to compost material. And Taiwanese humpback dolphin has been protected under the U.S. Endangered Species Act. The National Marine Fisheries Service has protected the rare Taiwanese humpback dolphins, listing the species as endangered under the Endangered Species Act. The decision comes in response to a 2016 petition from the Animal Welfare Institute, the Center for Biological Diversity, and Wild Earth Guardians to seek U.S. protections to help prevent the extinction of a population that now numbers fewer than 100 individuals. These rare dolphins deserve every possible chance to escape extinction, and we are thrilled that the National Marine Fisheries Service has stepped up and given them the protections of the Endangered Species Act, said Taylor Jones, Endangered Species Act advocate for Wild Earth Guardians. A myriad of dolphin species are at risk due to human activities, and we owe these intelligent creatures the best protections we can give them. Taiwanese humpback dolphins are threatened by gillnet fishing, pollution, boat traffic, and development along Taiwanese densely populated west coast, including the proposed construction of large wind farms. An endangered listing will enable the United States to provide technical expertise and resources to support Taiwan in conserving the rare dolphin. The Taiwanese humpback dolphin, also known as the Taiwanese white dolphin, is a biologically and culturally important subspecies of Indo-Pacific humpback dolphins. In 2014, the service denied a previous petition to protect the Taiwanese humpback dolphin, concluding the population was not distinct from the Chinese white dolphin, which swims in deeper waters closer to China's coastline. New taxonomy studies, however, conclude that the Taiwanese humpback dolphin is a distinct subspecies with unique characteristics whose numbers continue to decline to alarmingly low levels. This is a major victory for the Taiwanese dolphins, said Tara Zuardo, Animal Welfare Institute's senior wildlife attorney. The Endangered Species Act will help enable the United States to preserve the resources needed to help protect and conserve this imperiled population. We are grateful the National Marine Fisheries Service recognized the need to take immediate action. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening here on Free Radio, Santa Cruz 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org. You can hear a rebroadcast tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. That's Friday at 3 p.m. as part of our Environment Friday program. You could also listen to WMNB 107.1 in North Adams, Massachusetts, Fridays at 5:30 in the morning, KBOG 97.9 in Bendon, Oregon, Fridays at 10 a.m., KRFP 90.3 in Moscow, Idaho, Wednesdays at 3 p.m., KOWA 106.5 in Olympia, Washington, Saturdays at 7 a.m., WLSL 92.7 in Dade City, Florida, Sundays at noon, or KHCF 89.9 Morgan Hill in Gilroy, California, KGIG 104.9 in Modesto, California, KPHD 93.3 in Modesto, California, or Berkeley Liberation Radio at 104.1 in Berkeley, California. Please check with these stations for their schedule and time of broadcast. You can always listen to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, for all.net, where you can listen online or download this or previous editions of the Earth First Update. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download and broadcast. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio, produced at the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening, and please do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.